There once was a mullah, an Islamic teacher, who was in love with Indian classical music. More than anything in the world, he wanted to be a person who could coax beautiful harmonies like the ones we just sang out of thin air. He wanted to be a person who could make people's hearts nearly break because of the beauty of the music he made. He knew it was the sort of thing that would take some time to learn, and that he would have to seek out the services of an instructor to give him lessons in such power. And so, the mullah found an instructor, and he asked him, "How much will it cost?" The potential music teacher said to him, "3 pieces of silver the first month, and 1 piece of silver from the second month onward." "Excellent," said the mullah. "Sign me up for the second month." Don't we all wish we could sign up for the second month? Especially when what's being asked of us in return for the transformation we so earnestly desire is way harder to come by than money. Transformation has its cost. And sometimes it demands of us the most difficult things to give. Say, commitment, or initiative, or good old-fashioned hard work. Wouldn't it be better just to skip right ahead to the end, whenever we have already become what we have always dreamed of being? You know that time in the barely foreseeable future that you can't even quite imagine yet, when what we yearn for is already there and the things that trouble us are no more? When the polar ice caps have ceased to melt and the economy is in great shape and we all have jobs and this particular fashion trend I've noticed where teenage girls wear leggings as if they are pants, when all of those things that trouble us are gone. That's the world I would like to wake up in. The one that's already been transformed. If we could just skip to that, it'd be all right with me. But the mullah who yearned to play music learned that one doesn't coax one's fingers to dance to the tunes of great composers overnight. Nor can the struggles of our age come to resolution unless we ourselves commit to the process of changing the world from what it is to what it should be. One can't get from here to there without committing wholeheartedly to the process of transformation, even when transformation is the hardest thing of all. We must commit to transformation if we are to direct it at all. We must be a guiding hand upon the wheel of destiny, using our, albeit limited, power to shift the course of the future. And the truth is that even if we did nothing at all, change itself isn't something we can avoid. It's in our nature, in the nature of the cosmos, to change. This is, after all, a spinning globe we stand upon, not a static one. And in a way, change is something that we are, not something that happens to us. It's the unstoppable process of becoming ourselves. We only exist in this moving world as people who are becoming, not people who are standing still. Because we know that standing still was never really an option in the first place. One of my favorite poets, Denise Levertov, writes of that inevitability of change, of this fact that we're caught up in it, whether we would have it so or not. She knows the unending process of change and that cost of pretending we can stand still, and she writes, "Fate's a tide, it seems, ebbs and flows responsive to action and inaction. Try to remain in stasis, and blown sand stings your face. Creatures shrivel on rock pools no waves renews. Clean the littered beach, clear the lines of a forming poem, the waters will flood inward, dull stones again fulfill their glowing destinies, and what was emptiness is a cup that holds the ocean. The waters of change flow inward in our lives, in our churches, in our communities, bringing in their wake a season of renewal. And out of the unknown is born a cup that holds the whole ocean. Change is inevitable, and it can be beautiful, even when it catches us by surprise. However beautiful, however glowing and expansive and exciting, it isn't supposed to be easy. And as soon as we go and get all cozy, as soon as the pace of things slows down a bit, you can bet that another turn of the great wheel will go and shake things up again. It's happening all around us, change. The pull of the tides and the march of time that carries all things swirling in its wake. It is inevitable, and fighting it is all but impossible. But the fact that we're changing in and of itself doesn't guarantee that we're headed in the right direction. To have some small measure of power to transform ourselves and our world into our vision for it, we cannot sit and wait for the inevitable. There is too much work to do. And that kind of change, transformation in the direction of our dreams, that doesn't happen to us unless we set out our hearts and minds to do it. It doesn't happen by skipping ahead and dreaming of the day when it's all been realized for us. Instead, it happens when we take the first step from something that is broken and towards some vision of eventual wholeness. In our reading today, we heard about folks in 12-step groups who show up and by their mere presence admit that they cannot go it alone, that something in their life is in need of transformation and the stakes are too high to let it go without care and attention. Buechner says, through prayer and meditation, through help from one another and helpful books, they try to draw nearer in any way they can to God or whatever they have instead of God. They don't have answers. Some of them don't even have a clear way forward, but they know that they must start there, with people who will listen, by speaking the truth of their broken hearts and their hurtful choices in proclaiming their need to be transformed. That is a level of honesty that's hard to come by in this world, a bit of vulnerability that can only be born out of utter necessity. Transformation has been our theme this month at Brew, and it was fitting for the month when spring burst upon our doorsteps and Easter unfolded all around us. In keeping with that theme, I've been trying to include it in various aspects of our services, including family worship, which incidentally, for those of you who don't know, is at 9:15 every Sunday morning in the upstairs chapel. Now, in last week's family worship, I came to understand in a different way how difficult the whole concept of transformation really is. Just what is being asked of us or of anyone in order to begin a process of real intentional change. See, in that service I told a story, a rather predictable one, about how a caterpillar becomes a butterfly and it has to go into its cocoon in order to emerge as something more beautiful, etc., etc. The metaphor is pretty clear. And at the end I posed a question to the children gathered there that went something like, how would you like to be transformed? Or, what would you like to see changed about yourself? And the moment that question left my lips, I wished I could take it back. Because there I was, surrounded by this little group of brilliant and marvelous and loving children. Kids who should be proud of who they are, and proud of their quirks, and proud of their differences, and their glorious little selves. And here I was, in essence, asking them, so, what would you change about yourself if you could? I half expected in that moment for someone to say, I want to be taller, or I wish I were smarter, or something else that would break my heart and leave me wanting to grab them up and say, no, you're perfect, never change. Be proud of who you are and don't go to any cocoon and don't come out a different person. I love you just as you are. Truth be told, I don't remember much of what the children said, partly because that entire dialogue was running through my head. I don't think they said that much. But the whole experience reminded me that the concept of transformation is predicated on the central idea that something needs to change, must change, is broken enough that change is not an option, but a necessity. What I was asking our children to do felt, in a way, like confession. Admitting that something about ourselves is in need of transformation always feels like confession. And I wasn't really ready to subject our children to that challenge. It seemed like too much to ask of them. But it is not too much to ask of myself, and I dare say, it is not too much to ask of you. Honesty is a precondition of transformation. And while I want our children always to know how lovely they are and how blessed we all are to be around them, eventually even they will have something real to confess. Eventually even they will need the grace of transformation, for even they will fall short of their own visions for themselves. The people gather at the AA meeting because they know there's something in their life that must be transformed, and in some ways they are holier than those gathered in most churches will ever be, because they are more honest, and they are not afraid to say that they are broken. We do not often speak of such things among us. Certainly not we who have left behind such archaic rituals as atonement. But we are fooling ourselves if we think we are not in need of transformation. I am in need of it. I can tell you that. The litany of transformation I could offer is as long as my arm, and I will spare you the gory details. But if you start with a curious combination of ego and self-criticism, pair that with a dose of occasional thoughtlessness and a dollop of cynicism, you get the general idea. It's as if I need to say to someone, to the universe, to myself, to my friends, I'm Nancy and I have too little faith. And the rest of you might respond, hi Nancy. And we'd move on, ready to make a change. Not to fix it all, but to begin on a path toward repair and renewal. I yearn to be a person filled with greater gentleness, who doesn't put people in boxes and doesn't either excessively celebrate or discount my own gifts and struggles. What I want to transform into is a better version of myself, and I believe I share that yearning with a great many people in this room today. It's not that easy, to say the least, to admit that change needs to happen. UU religious educator and theologian Mark Harris once said, "That's the thing about transformation. Nothing gets transformed unless it's sufficiently inadequate to need transforming in the first place." In our lives, we are pattern makers, and we tend to follow the pattern as best as we are able for as long as possible until something comes along that convinces us the pattern is not good enough and some adjustment is necessary. In this way, transformation doesn't come about just because we'd rather like to see a shift in our patterns. It comes about because our patterns, our choices, some aspects of our lives themselves are wholly inadequate, and nothing we are currently doing can get us where we want to go. Transformation in the direction of our dreams doesn't happen unless we first admit that we're not there yet. And we pair that with the hope that we can, with effort, do and be and become something closer to our convictions than we are right now. See how it feels like confession? And yet it's more than that. It's confession paired with action, acknowledgement accompanied by the hope of change and the first steps toward it. The transformation begins when we show up alongside one another and admit that the whole thing is necessary. It begins when we say the words and think the thought and set ourselves out upon an intentional path that challenges our assumptions and messes with our old familiar ways of being. I think in this place that I am safe enough to have my patterns disrupted. And I am grateful for that. And I think perhaps that's what the church is for, after all. So that we might use our shortcomings as the groundwork of our transformation, turning that which we must leave behind into a blessing for this world. I don't say that we should bend our knees and rend our garments in atonement, only that we have the capacity to turn our struggles into gifts if only we admit to ourselves what those struggles really are. There's a story about Mahatma Gandhi, a man whom one might say lives among the pantheon of those truly transformed into grace. On his train trips throughout India, the story says that he used to get off to stop and collect money for the poor as often as he possibly could. And as one of his friends saw him out there collecting the money for the poor, he said, "If you want to see somebody consumed by greed, look no further than that man." Gandhi's greed, of course, was not for himself, but for the poor. His great flaw was transformed into service to the world. And his act of atonement was not to hit his knees and beg forgiveness, but to use all that he was, including his flaws, to increase the level of care he could offer the world. What within you is waiting to be transformed? How can even your flaws be shifted step by step until they are of service to the world, transformed into instruments not of confession, but of compassion?